This month, back in 1773, a group of men gathered in western Massachusetts at a house on the Housatonic River to draft a document aimed at the British Crown declaring that mankind are equal and free. A woman who was enslaved in that house overheard the discussion and decided the words applied to her, too. As reporter Nancy Cohen explains to us this morning, Elizabeth Freeman later used those ideas to win her freedom.
A house in Sheffield built in 1735 was home to Colonel John Ashley, his wife Hannah, and their four children. People enslaved by the Ashleys lived here too, including Brom, Zach, John, Harry, and Elizabeth. Mark Wilson, curator of collections for the Trustees of Reservations, which owns this house, says the organization has shifted its focus from the story of Ashley, a prominent landowner and judge.
We began working on retelling the story from the perspective of the enslaved members of the household. In terms of the story of Elizabeth, it wasn't being told properly and it wasn't being given its due.
Elizabeth Freeman was brought to this house in 1758 as a teenager. She was known then as Bet and later Mum Bet. She helped keep the fires going. She cleaned, cooked, and served. In the upstairs study on a January day in 1773, Ashley and 10 other white men were writing a document called the Sheffield Resolves.
We have a copy of it here.
Wilson says Elizabeth was probably serving the men food or drinks and overheard these ideas being discussed.
Resolved that mankind in a state of nature are equal, free, and independent of each other and have a right to the undisturbed enjoyment of their lives, their liberty, and property.
Historian Emily Blank of Rowan University says about 2% of the population in Massachusetts was enslaved in the 1770s. And she says, at the same time, white residents of the colonies, like Ashley, were arguing that America was a country of freedom.
They actually complained that they were being enslaved to the British. And so enslaved people also were starting to demand that they should be free because slavery was inconsistent with this new rhetoric and new idea of what America was going to be as something separate from England.
Clark University historian Usman Power Green says these words of freedom may have inspired Elizabeth.
White men with power, one of whom's a slaveholder, are writing these words and are saying these words. And that's what's going to give her the sort of impulse, right? Not the idea that her life is not one that was, you know, worth more than being a slave. It's the moment that these same white people are articulating that verbally and they're writing it down and proclaiming it that are going to just going to encourage her and try to see if those would manifest in her actual freedom.
About 9 years after she heard these words, something happened in this house that changed everything for Elizabeth. One day, bread was baked for the family. Lizzie, who was either Elizabeth's daughter or sister, historians disagree, put a piece of dough in the hearth for herself. John Ashley's wife Hannah got angry and grabbed a shovel from the fireplace. Elizabeth intervened.
Put her arm in the way and then was struck by this, which left a scar that she would, of course, hold out for people to sort of see and wear it as a sort of illustration, a sort of violence that she endured as an enslaved person in the household.
That act of violence was the last straw, says Wilson.
Elizabeth asked for an apology. She didn't receive it, so she walked away from the house.
The exact details vary, but the story goes that it was winter and a foot of snow blanketed her path. Elizabeth walked several miles to the home of one of the men she had overheard writing the Sheffield Resolves.
She has the resilience to just bundle up and walk to the home of the young Theodore Sedgwick, a lawyer, and ask for a suit for her freedom.
Sedgwick agreed to represent her, and he added a man also enslaved by the Ashleys to the lawsuit. Brom and Bet versus Ashley was heard in the Berkshire County Court. Historian Emily Blank says Sedgwick's argument was based on the new Massachusetts state constitution.
It declared that all men are born free and equal, and Sedgwick and others believed that this was inconsistent with holding people in slavery in the state.
They won their freedom, and the judge ordered John Ashley to pay 30 shillings each to Brom and Bet. After appealing and then dropping the appeal, Ashley paid the money. Not long after, an enslaved man, Quok Walker, also sued for his freedom in Massachusetts and won. Emily Blank says in the aftermath, two facts point to a kind of quiet emancipation in the state.
One, nobody else sued for freedom. Two, when we get to the 1790 census, there's nobody in the state of Massachusetts that will admit that they own slaves.
That doesn't mean slavery had disappeared, but Blank says the state's legal institutions did not support it. After winning her lawsuit, Bette, who now called herself Elizabeth Freeman, worked for 20 years as a paid housekeeper in the home of Theodore Sedgwick, her lawyer. In her 60s, she moved out onto her own property with her family on nearly 19 acres. She farmed and worked as a midwife. Power Green says she showed that one individual can make big change.
One can challenge authority and end up shifting the way people think about the world. And so for me personally, I'm tremendously inspired by her. And I'm actually shocked that she's not memorialized in Massachusetts, particularly in Western Massachusetts. You know, we need a Mom Bette statue in Western Massachusetts.
But we do have Elizabeth Freeman's words, as written down by Catherine Maria Sedgwick, Theodore Sedgwick's daughter, including this quote. Any time while I was a slave, if 1 minute's freedom had been offered to me and I had been told I must die at the end of that minute, I would have taken it, just to stand 1 minute on God's earth, a free woman. I would. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Nancy Cohen.